Now you can use real-time sensors to get information from every part of the farm, from the soil, from the water, from the weather, from the crop itself is now speaking to plant breeders, right, in real time. And so it's really going to be profound.
Today, we're diving into one of the most critical and urgent challenges of our time, feeding the world.
We're talking about edge computing on farms, about AI that forecasts harvests, and about networks that route food in real time. Hunger is becoming less about scarcity and more about infrastructure coordination. Our big question is, what does it take to build the infrastructure and systems that can feed the world?
We're joined by Christine Gould, a global leader in agri-food innovation. As founder of Thought for Food, Christine built the largest and most diverse innovator community in food and agriculture, reaching 30,000 next-gen talents in over 180 countries. So, Christine, it's a real pleasure to have you here on the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and let's dive into the conversation.
Awesome to see you, Christine. So tell us about the current state of agriculture in the world right now. What's the state of this global, vitally important industry?
Yeah, I mean, it is actually the world's most important industry, responsible for feeding 8 billion people, ideally multiple times a day. But what's really kind of fascinating about this industry is that it's running on a 20th century operating model, but in a risk environment that is very much 21st century. So, you know, we're really faced with some big, big challenges to overcome. Being an entrepreneur myself, what I see in those challenges is lots of opportunity. And so if we look at kind of like all of those risks that are affecting every industry right now in our volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world, you know, we're seeing climate shocks, we're seeing geopolitical tensions, we're seeing wars and tariffs now being imposed. In each of those actually is a chance to step up and innovate and do things differently and move our food systems to become more decentralized, more digital, actually, and more resilient. And I think that that's a big role where innovation and technology, you know, will play an outsized impact.
Wow. So it sounds like so many individuals and organizations have been putting focus on this. So is it getting worse or at least not getting better?
I mean, you're right. We've seen some progress over the past decade in terms of some of those macro indicators like hunger and malnutrition. But really, since the pandemic, things have been getting worse for many people. In that, we're seeing climate shocks affecting yields all over the world and is creating hardship for farmers. Many people are unable to even access food and this rise of malnutrition, which is impacting every region, not just developing countries. So it's a all hands on deck kind of opportunity. And that's what is exciting. Another big number to mention is our food systems are costing the world annually $12 trillion in hidden costs, right? There's a huge upside, though, by taking action to fix our food systems. People estimate that there's a $4.5 trillion annual economic opportunity, but it's very complex. It's very fragmented. So, you know, what to do, how to do it. Those are challenges that we all need to be focused on, but it's different than, you know, other sectors where kind of like a one size fits all intervention can have these profound effects. We need a variety of different types of solutions right when it comes to food and agriculture.
Okay. And there's this uniqueness, I think, to agriculture. It's like a bifurcation within the industry. There's a split between big ag and smaller farmers. Can you help us understand what percentage of global food production comes from big agriculture versus rural farms? Or how does this split affect individual farms and worldwide modernization?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great insight. I mean, I've actually spent my life in both sides of this bifurcation that you mentioned. So I grew up on a farm in the Midwest of the United States, which is kind of like big ag central, the corn and soy belt. And then I worked for one of the big agribusiness companies for a decade of my career. And over the past decade, I've actually been working with startups all over the world and farmers, like small farmers all over the world. And so what's interesting is you do have this like big ag version of agriculture, which is, you know, is something like you have 1% of farms owning like 70% of the world's farmland. These farms are actually you know, mainly growing commodity crops, things like corn and soy and wheat, which primarily corn and soy especially go into animal feed and fuel kind of like the industrialized food system. So you're seeing in those big ag concentrated farms, you're seeing a lot of investment in automation and digital technologies. But then on the flip side, you have this version of agriculture, which is smallholder agriculture or family farming. And they're actually, there's about 600 million smallholder farms around the world. And those are farms under 2 hectares. They make, you know, up the majority of the world's farmers, but actually comprise a sliver of the land that's dedicated to farming in comparison to like those big concentrated farms. Unfortunately, a lot of those farms are actually digitally excluded and they're actually not prioritized usually in the innovation agendas. But what we're seeing actually is a wake-up call. Like earlier, I talked about this word resiliency, right? So what you're seeing is actually more people focusing on local food security, national food security, and here's where small farmers are going to actually play a bigger role going forward. They're going to play a much more important role to make sure that, you know, we have food production closer to where it's needed, and this resiliency aspect is going to become the word of the decade, in my opinion. It's really what we need to be designing for. And with that comes the opportunity for more decentralization and more focus on these small farms and how to bring them into the fold.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things there that I thought were interesting. First, earlier on, you said that the food insecurity is not just in developing countries. And then we talked a little bit about these two pieces, these smaller farms and the bigger businesses. So both need to be interested, given it's not just happening in developing countries. And then I'm curious about how does the digital piece kind of fall into fixing that?
I mean, for me, digital is the great enabler, right? We have so many technologies at our fingertips right now, whether that be, you know, apps that, you know, can connect a smallholder or any farmer truly to markets, whether that be kind of like R&D that we're doing to make crops more productive or to develop new biological crop inputs, or whether that be linking supply and demand to reduce food loss and waste, or logistics channels, how to improve those to make them more efficient and, you know, less and fewer emissions, right? And so those are all things that digital infrastructure will, that'll be the great unlock, right? To make all of these things possible and accelerated and to reach more people. So I think like all of the tools we have that we're investing in and making possible, we need to build that enabling layer, which is digital infrastructure, so that, you know, farmers can access these tools, but also, you know, everyone everywhere, so they can be part of building the solutions that's needed to transform food systems so we can unlock that $4.5 trillion economic opportunity that's ripe for the taking by people who can get involved.
That's fascinating. Can you help us understand maybe where some of the best digital investment is occurring in the agricultural industry, or some really great examples and use cases where the food supply chain has been advanced because of digital innovation?
Yeah, I mean, a few examples come to mind. One is, of course, the United States, which has really taken initiative to bring rural areas into broadband and modern digital connectivity. But then in other parts of the world, like let's take China, right? They've really gone in on like 5G in rural areas, and you're seeing actually farmers, you know, being connected to markets and kind of the WeChat phenomenon. And a really interesting company that emerged during COVID, Pinduoduo, they were kind of a platform, you know, e-commerce platform that started connecting farmers to consumers, again, to build access when supply chains were broken. And so that was just using basic digital tools. And India is another place. They've really like spearheaded a lot of digital infrastructure to, again, to connect rural communities, opportunities for financial mechanisms, as well as for market information, right? That's been a challenge at the policy level, but been really interesting to see their government really taking, you know, a full throttle approach to unlock this opportunity. Other parts of the world, I think, you know, need to be more paid attention to. And those are places like sub-Saharan Africa or parts of Latin America. But as I mentioned, I was just in Ethiopia and it was really interesting. I was chatting with a guy from Safaripom, one of their mobile providers. And they were actually providing microloans, you know, via mobile phones to small farmers, wheat farmers, actually. And so again, this kind of like, it's really just interesting to see the pieces of the puzzle come together, to see new players outside of ag coming in and seeing this opportunity to link ag into the digital world and provide these types of solutions that can be transformational and, of course, also solve these resiliency and food security challenges that we need to solve.
Sorry, those micro loans are going specifically into digital investments for those farmers?
Exactly.
That's great.
And what, you know, another example here is it de-risks the investments, right? Because you're actually giving information that makes the farmers more productive, gives them the information they need to manage risks, whether that be weather risks and market information so they can optimize, you know, their selly. And so it's a really smart model. Again, this is like not about development, in my opinion. This is really about really strong economic business cases, right? You're de-risking your loans and bringing, you know, previously unbankable parts of the system into, you know, bankable solutions that unlock this big opportunity to solve our big food security challenges.
Yeah, that's super interesting. You named a couple of examples and also cited kind of the effect that government and policy have on these types of investments. Could you say maybe a little bit more about the barriers outside of that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this is a full court press. We need governments involved. We need investment. And that means like institutional investors through to even venture capitalists involved. We need startups and innovators involved. We need companies involved, you know, outside of the core business of food and ag. And importantly, we also need farmers involved. And that's a big message for me that I'm, you know, giving at every platform that I'm involved in. It's like, really, we need to have farmers and their needs and realities centered in the types of solutions that we're bringing around digital connectivity. There's a terminology that is often mentioned when it comes to digital solutions in food and ag, and that's the reality of the digital divide. And the digital divide is actually like very literal in the sense, as we've been talking about the digital exclusion of rural populations that we need to, you know, build enabling infrastructure to connect rural areas to these types of tools. But there's also a digital divide that exists because of the age gap that exists in farming, or the challenge that we're dealing with it in many parts of the world, especially in emerging markets. The average age of the world's farmer is over 60 years old. So they're not as savvy with digital tools that young people, you know, are astute at using. You also have a cultural digital divide. And that's the case for food systems like that are based on traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, where, you know, they actually are incorporating technology by design. But even systems like biodynamic farming, which is used, you know, it's increasing in Europe and parts of America as kind of a sustainable or regenerative farming system. I mean, they're actually also actively excluding certain digital tools from the farming system. It's, you know, kind of more based on this traditional knowledge and farmer's almanac type, you know, thinking. And so we have to be cognizant of this, that there's cultural elements, that there's, you know, demographic elements, and of course, this literal element of, you know, rural populations being excluded. With all of that in mind, you know, it's about meeting people where they are with what they're used to using. I mentioned the Pinduoduo example of using WeChat to connect farmers to markets. We see that all the time in the startups that I'm working with. I mean, simple tools like WhatsApp or radio are actually like super powerful, actually, in getting transformation to happen on the farm and to have this leapfrog effect of what's possible to bring new opportunities into agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in our industry, in tech in particular, you hear a lot about the digital divide and even the ways that we participate around education, right? But it's like, this is part of education too. It's education for the farmers at the edge. But it's sort of like, how can you only invest in education when people aren't even able to eat?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's one of these things where this has to be known more as part of the digital divide. That's learning for me.
And I actually think so. There's some interesting anecdotes, if you don't mind me bringing them up. But one is like this concept of reverse mentoring. So as I mentioned, over the past decade, I've been working with startups really all over the world. And they've been startups launched by millennial and Gen Z generation. Part of the reason I started my previous organization, Thought for Food, was actually to bring young people into the sector of agriculture, to bring their digital savviness and entrepreneurial spirit to bear in developing the solutions that we need. And what we saw was, in many parts of the world, these young people were actively encouraged by their parents and grandparents to leave the farm and pursue economic opportunities in urban areas. But once they went to study at university and, you know, learn, you know, business concepts and entrepreneurship concepts, they actually returned to the farm and brought that digital transformation to their farming operations. And I saw this countless times. And I think that is a really exciting thing that we can do as stakeholders in the food system. By the way, we all are stakeholders in the food system because we all eat, right? But it's like with the power of our investments and the corporate programs that we initiate, it's like, how do we develop this rural renaissance where young people feel like there's economic prospects, where farmers are able to like get, you know, true economic opportunity. And I really think digital is an enabler of that. And we can excite people with that and show them agriculture is a place of opportunity.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And bringing that next generation into agriculture, I think, is a game changer. And so that's very inspiring. I want to transition us and talk a little bit about specific technology. What's the role of AI in agriculture? When you think about how distributed and how many farmers are at what we would call the edge, share some of your insights with us around that.
I mean, I am such an enthusiast about AI. We are living in, I think, the most exciting period in history. But for me, AI is really going to be the biggest game changer that we've seen in agriculture in decades, right? Just like it's already transforming every other part of our lives, from how we communicate to how we shop to how we manage our health, how we educate ourselves. I think that we're, you know, at the precipice of really rewriting the rules of every part of agriculture, from research and development through to, you know, how we produce, how we process, how we distribute, and how we consume. So for me, you know, AI is like, there's so much opportunity. I talked about the fact that at the edge right now, here and now, there's a lot of work happening with simple technologies like SMS and WhatsApp, right? But imagine a world where we can use machine learning, AI, and Gen AI to start to analyze some of that information using edge devices, which are becoming faster, cheaper, and more powerful, you know, every day, it seems like, right? And then, of course, linking that into cloud for even more analysis. And I think like getting that insight, really the reality is the ground truth is going to be so important. So we're going to get that all of our information, which historically, because I've been working with, you know, a variety of startups and scale-ups that have been using machine learning and AI for decades. But I think like right now it's this convergence, right? It's just becoming so much more powerful, and things that weren't possible even 5 years ago are possible. So in one of the startups I was working at before, we were using like historical data to do modeling of farms and to make predictions. Now, you know, we can use real-time sensors to get that information. And we can also, you know, use sensors from every part of the farm, from the soil, from the water, from the weather, from the crop itself is now speaking, you know, to plant breeders, right, in real time. And so you can do all, and to logistics centers. I mean, we were working with a big company that's in the process of building a digital twin of logistics systems, including rural areas, again, so they can start to model how to optimize some of these things. So it's really like going to be profound. And, you know, I think it's really like it's a moment in time to really think about what's possible, ask the what if questions, and then engage as many people as possible to help solve those. Like I said, including farmers, including indigenous people, including young people, right? Because it's a new time. We can take some of the data that's been held up, and so much of AI is trained on kind of like Western science data, right? And it's like, how do we open it to more languages, to more perspectives, and start to find blind spots. I think that's another really interesting use case for AI. And then diagnostics, right? So we talked about like research and development and modeling of what we can do in terms of crop breeding and ag inputs for farms. Can we also like give farmers like the tools that we have right now? I can take a picture of my house plant and get a diagnosis of what to do to extend its life. We should be able to do that with crops too, everywhere. And that's just getting started. But I think like AI is going to unleash that. You can really take a picture of any crop in any soil and any place in the world and get a right size, right fitted recommendation of what to do. And that's going to be transformational for agriculture.
You talked a little bit at the beginning of our time with us about a 20th century operating model. And it's clear that AI is critical to sort of accelerating the agricultural community into the future. And in particular, because younger farmers and younger people in general globally are going to be more AI native. And so, but the reality is that you know, AI, the performance of AI, the accuracy of AI, it's still early days, generative AI in particular, it's still early days, but it's also heavily dependent on massive infrastructure and infrastructure that is still evolving even in, you know, densely populated urban areas. Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about what works for connectivity today in terms of broadband and things like that so that we can think about how we could even ready for a future of AI?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And something that, you know, I've been thinking about a lot because there is like this infrastructure need. And so obviously, like I mentioned, digital infrastructure in terms of telecommunications is a basic, you know, entry point. I think we can also be looking, I mean, there have been systems like satellite systems, right, which have been really, really interesting. We've seen Starlink and other organizations. There's a company called Tomorrow Now that has been deploying their own satellite system over places like Kenya, right, to provide weather data to Kenyan farmers. They're an MIT spin out. Another company that comes to mind just that's been using AI for many years now is a company in Bangladesh that's now been rolled up into Bayer Crop Science, but the entrepreneur who founded it was using SMS data to, you know, provide disease outbreak information to farmers around potato late blight, which is a devastating disease affecting, you know, the potato crop and caused the potato famine, you know, the infamous potato famine. And they would also provide like information to farmers about when to spray so that they could reduce unnecessary applications and improve health and sustainability, which was actually causing dire consequences. So these types of AI, you know, have been around, like basic implementation. But now, as I mentioned, you have kind of some of these sensors, which have, you know, the ability to process information at the edge. You know much more about that than I do, as well as, you know, the ability to connect via long range systems to cloud infrastructure that's being developed. And I just dream of a world where these become, you know, more prolific in rural areas and are actually, yeah, but just part of this enablement for unlocking this rural renaissance and this, you know, digital revolution that we can bring into agriculture. So that's why I'm just so excited to see, you know, your company stepping into the conversation.
Yeah, I can sense your excitement now. It sounds like we're on the precipice of solving kind of the rural connectivity problem that has always been a major issue. Mm-hmm. Satellite technology, 5G technology, all kinds of wireless communications, that's enabling sensors in the grounds and in the fields to really help us gather the information and make the determination of what needs to happen next. Mm-hmm. And we can then stream that data back to data centers and into systems that are either powered by AI or some other type of model to make the recommendation mm-hmm. back to the farmer and produce the crops that we need. Is that fair? Like, you think from a connectivity perspective, maybe we're solving some problems?
Yeah.
So then what's the next big problem to solve? Is it supply chain? Like, we've talked a lot, actually, I think so far about growing crops, I think. What about getting food to the individual? So like, what's that part of the industry look like?
Yeah, absolutely. And so first of all, just doubling down on what you just said, absolutely. I can name you so many companies like around the world, particularly in emerging economies, that are doing exactly what you said, collecting data with sensors, you know, processing it, sending it to the cloud, providing intelligence back to farmers. But to your point, this digital unlock is really across the entire value chain. So we've been working too with actually big companies that have distribution centers. So they're aggregators of, you know, food products, and they use those to deploy, you know, into shipping or freight on airplanes or even last mile delivery, you know, and packaging. And they're actually bringing in AI systems that can do really precise things like detect the, you know, the spoilage rate of an avocado, for example.
Well, that's so unique to this industry, right?
Yeah.
Manufacturers that sell widgets, they can be in a box for 6 years.
Right.
You can't do that with food.
Exactly.
That is such a unique challenge for agriculture, right?
Exactly. And exactly. So you have these freshness parameters and different people demand different parameters. Like, you might need an avocado for a smoothie that doesn't need to be perfect, but, you know, for another use case, like guacamole, it needs to, you know, have a different level of quality. Yeah. So not only are they using computer vision to analyze said crop, mango mangoes, avocados, whatever it may be, but they're also connecting that with data about what the demand is, right? So they can get the right product to the right place at the right time at the right quality level. And then, as I mentioned, this whole like digital layer around logistics. And so we've been working with some logistics companies, and they are really excited about, one, building businesses that allow for this kind of value to be unlocked with their customers around fresh produce delivery, and also connecting farmers to markets in a more efficient way. So they're building like digital twins and looking at all of these logistics. And then I also want to mention one last thing is at the government level, right? So I talked about all of these supply and demand challenges. So you're seeing everything from hedge funds through to big CPGs building dashboards so they can like figure out where they're going to, you know, get their cocoa from, right, in the world, where, and they are using AI actually to power those systems and do predictions so they can optimize their prices and make sure they have what they need and when they need it.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you just said sounds like it's leverageable by the people with the most investment. Do the big firms play a role in enabling the ones at the edge, the smaller ones?
It's a great question. And it's something that, you know, I feel like is a big part of my role in life is to get the big companies to pay attention to these like maybe hidden business opportunities or ones that they're not currently prioritizing. I mean, I like to call them leapfrog opportunities, many of these markets and many of these smaller opportunities. How do we excite them about them and get them to notice it? So, you know, at the beginning of the call, we talked about the bifurcation of agriculture, and there's, you know, John Deere out there developing their mega, you know, automated weeder, right, that can go on these mega scale farms and use lasers to kill weeds so you can reduce herbicide use, which is amazing. But I recently worked with a startup in Egypt, actually, that was developing autonomous weeding robots, but right-sized for the, you know, North Africa and Middle East market. They were specifically developed for the crops of the region and for the farm sizes of the region. And they were actually leveraging data from another interesting platform that's emerged called the Open Source Weeding Program. I'm probably butchering the name, but essentially you're seeing this kind of groundswell of entrepreneurs from the places that are really feeling the problems, and that are leveraging, you know, collaborative tools like the open source movement, which transformed many industries, is now being brought into agriculture. And again, you're seeing kind of this decentralization happen. Now, my big message is, hey, big companies, hey, big investors, these are your opportunities to invest. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can tap into these new markets. You can build resiliency and carve out your next billion-dollar opportunities by investing in these types of solutions. So that's the translation, I think, you know, job that I have to do and we all have to do right now, and bringing those edge solutions to the fore.
Yeah. So the key to the future, all of this includes the matchmaking that you're talking about.
Matchmaking. Exactly. Exactly. And showing there's a business case. And that's another problem with agriculture. I mean, the word itself is agrarian and culture. So agrarian, people of the land, culture, deep rooted and hard to change. So it's marred by this perception of not being, you know, innovative or easy to change. And so now, you know, we're seeing there's all of these digital tools available, all of these biotech tools available. And now it's matching the opportunity with the business thinking that has, you know, kind of dominated so much of the food system to date. We built an industrial model. It works great at producing calories at scale. But now we need to move towards producing nutrition and resiliency.
Yeah.
And that's going to take a new business model.
Yeah. I mean, there's this stigma of agriculture that it's an old school, a manual, a hardworking industry. And it's like, it's very, very digital now.
It is.
For those of us that are technologists, like, that should be incredibly exciting. And there's tons of untapped opportunity there to bring technology in and to disrupt. But the key about disrupting this industry is the amazing benefit it has on the human race.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where I can exude your passion here. Yeah. One thing we didn't really get into is just the incredible uncertainty that weather brings.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have seasons growing in the Midwest that like it just rains nonstop, and other seasons like you don't get any rain. And like,
exactly.
I mean, the weather part is interesting for all the obvious reasons, but also, you know, like we run a data center company, like we design our buildings and infrastructure to withstand crazy weather elements. And like, that's within the confines of concrete and mm-hmm. materials, right? But like you're talking about farms that are subject to anything really, right? And so like the complexity, it's really necessary, right? To enable mm-hmm. these digital tools to become more predictive because of all that's at risk. I mean, I know even just with my local CSA farm, right? Like there was so much rain in Northern Virginia, you know, for the last, I don't know, months and months and months that the, you know, it completely impacted mm-hmm. everything that they give to us every week, right? And so,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the ability for technology to be able to, and AI in particular, to be able to arm the smaller farms at the edge is super critical.
And I mean, the thing is that the historical data that a lot of the yield predictions and kind of like crop models have been developed on was based on, yeah, historical data when, you know, we had more kind of predictable weather patterns. And now everything is changing. And so, yeah, like we need this kind of like concept of real time living intelligence. You know, it can't just be based on historical data because it's outdated with the changing climate.
Yeah, the volatility, you know, makes the real time intelligence super critical. We hope that digital investment can help, you know, help those farmers at the edge be able to react more adaptively.
Yeah. So speaking of painting that new narrative, like you just gave us a couple of tidbits. Like if you were to look forward 10 to 15 years from now, what's your dream for agriculture?
I mean, I think it's a decentralized, localized, digitized version of agriculture where technology is kind of in service of human needs, where we're building, you know, flourishing, biodiverse, rich ecosystems, where we're, you know, eating all kinds of foods. You know, it's not a one size fits all. It's something where it's in service of us, right? I like to call artificial intelligence like, you know, more like augmented intelligence, right? It should be an extension of our human creativity and should be enhancing our lives in an augmented way, not in a replacing way. So that's the version of agriculture. You know, I grew up on a farm. It was an amazing, beautiful experience. You know, we were able to have farm to table, but like technology was an enabler of that. In a world where demographics are shifting, we need to make this all easier on humans and enhancing for ourselves. And I think technology can be a great enabler of that, but we need to have the vision. So I think the skills of the future are going to be around leadership that creates positive visions for the future, that focuses on collaboration, that, you know, unleashes creativity and human ingenuity all over the world. So that's my vision.
Yeah, I'm curious about when you say leadership, like we talked about policy and governments, we've talked about culture. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we've talked about the infrastructure demands on all of this. But are there other organizations or roles? Like certainly you're playing a role in helping people understand this, but who else can help with this?
Yeah. I mean, I am very passionate about bringing in the kind of creative communities. You know, we didn't even talk much about controlled environment agriculture, which is like very technified and closed loop, right? These controlled environment systems, whether they be vertical farms or greenhouses, how do we get people to think in these types of visions and build these in beautiful ways that enhance landscapes again and invite farmers? So I think the creative community I would involve the next generations, as mentioned, I think who really, you know, have a mindset towards sustainability, are very entrepreneurial, are tech savvy, and invite people from all over the world who really know their problems and their food systems well to have a seat at the table in developing the solutions. And if we can just translate all of this opportunity into the mindsets of the people with capital and with power over the supply chain, you know, it's going to create a huge unlocking that, you know, $4.5 trillion annual opportunity.
All right. So what are the needs you hope will be addressed?
I mean, I really think, you know, from a fundamental level, we do need to focus on making sure that everyone everywhere has access to a sufficient diet, but not only that, a nutritious diet, right? So we focus so far when we talked about, like when I grew up, it was all about solving hunger. But I think now it's obviously we need to make sure no one goes hungry, but we need to make sure that people are having healthy, nutritious food that can unlock their human potential and prevent things like stunting and allow allow people to be able to learn and contribute to society through the gifts that, you know, they have. So that's fundamental. But I also see this, you know, rural revolution, like this renaissance that we can bring to rural areas. How do we create the interest in going back to rural communities and revitalizing these and producing our food in better ways and you know, just making this renaissance that we know can happen occur. And I think that's going to take the full court press, all hands on deck. And there's a bit of this vision painting that needs to happen. So it can't just be a technology story. It's technology in service of the big vision we're trying to create.
Yeah. Christine, thank you so much for your time today. Your passion is very inspiring. Thank you for helping farmers, the agricultural industry. I mean, ultimately, you're trying to help feed the world. And it's just been an honor to speak with you and to learn from you. And I know that, like, I'm inspired now to go look into things. I'm curious if, like, there's one thing you'd want to say to our audience. If they've been inspired, what could they do? Maybe even a small step to help with this.
Yeah, as I mentioned, agriculture really affects every single person everywhere on the planet. We are all part of the food system as eaters, as consumers, as innovators, as investors. So I really think it's like this is a moment where we need all hands on deck to use our power for good, to really paint a picture of what technology and digitization can do for the future and get involved, right? And it's as simple as that. It's think about where your food comes from. Think about the role that you can play to help improve the food system for the 8 billion people that are alive today, the 10 billion people by 2050, and future generations. So let's do this.
Big thanks to Christine for joining us today to help us explore the current state of global agriculture and how this vital industry is innovating to feed the world.
And stay tuned for our next episode of Interconnected, where we'll look at yet another technology megatrend and how it intersects with digital infrastructure. You can find all of our episodes on our Interconnected YouTube page or wherever you find your podcasts.